Blog Talk Radio.
Maybe sometime in the future, we'll develop
better human relations. But at this time, we in a very trying time. And so it's going to force us to depend on ourselves. Now, today, with the Willie Lynch segment, I'm going to read out of a book. And it's the book is Chains and Images of Psychological Slavery by Dr. Naeem Akbar. And he makes an interesting point about work. He says, this is in this chapter called Work. It's not in the chapter, it's in the sub-chapter called Work. Work in a natural society is looked upon with pride, both because it permits a man to express, a man or woman to express him or herself, and because it supplies his survival needs. As a natural form of expression, work is not too distinguishable from play. During slavery, work was used as a punishment. The need for workers was the most identifiable cause of the African Americans' enslavement. Work came to be despised as any punishment is despised. Work became hated, and as does any activity which accomplishes no reward for the doer. Work became identified with slavery. Even today, the African American slang expression which refers to work is a slave communicates this painful connection. You know, say like we're going to our slave. Through the course of centuries, work came to be a most hated activity. Despite the fact that we are over 100 years removed from the direct slavery experience, the African American still, to a great extent, hates work. Work is identified with punishment. Work is equated with inferiority, as Stamp observes in his book. Masters who had at their command as few as a half dozen field hands were tempted to improve their social status by withdrawing from the fields and devouring most of their time to managerial functions. But most slaves never saw their masters toiling in the fields. Consequently, slaves equated work with enslavement and freedom with the avoidance of work. Work was identified as the activity of the underdog to be viewed with pride. Work is something approached unwillingly and out of necessity only. It is also a badge of disparagement. Now, I read that because I really believe that we still feel that same way, that we won't work hard even to do things for ourselves because we still equating work and doing hard work with being a slave or with being on the plantation. And we're no longer there, and we're not going to get anywhere until we decide to work hard for ourselves. We're going to have to work harder for ourselves than we did work for any white man to get ourselves back in the position that we once held in the world. And so I think that needs to be really thought out and really negotiated, especially amongst our young people, because we're always looking for some job that you don't have to do nothing. And there is no job like that. So, Brother Marvin, I appreciate the time, and it's back to you, brother.
Thank you, Brother Joyce. Thank you. Great job. So what are some ways that you suggest that we can get on our horses, so to speak, and get back to doing for ourselves?
Well, I mean, we have to start being men and women of our word. We have to start agreeing to support each other and then be right there to actually do the supporting and make it an activity where our children are involved with it. We have to start doing things, more things, as a community. Sometimes I watch the Hispanic community, and it'll be hundreds of them out there, you know, looking at a soccer game, either participating or looking at it. And that's because they do things as a family. In my community, I watch the West Asians. You know, when we go walking, when me and my wife go walking, we'll see groups of them walking, 9 or 10 walking together and discussing whatever it is that they're discussing. We need to be the same way. We need to start doing things as a collective, and then when you translate over from, like if we have a 5K and we have a successful 5K, and then we translate over to, okay, instead of taking up all the time with a 5K on this particular Saturday, we're going to go and we're going to learn how to farm, okay? Or we're going to go and we're going to help do some renovations at one of our people's houses. We're going to help paint. We're going to get things. We're going to declutter. But we're going to do it as a group. And we're going to have to start doing things like that, because with your investment is only going to end up as an improvement to our community when we invest like that. So that's my response, brother.
Man, Brother George, I like it. I like it so much. Man, thank you so much for the segment. And let's get on with the show. I appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
All right.
Who's going to do it? Who is going to make a difference? Somebody's going to have to step up. That's going to be you and me. Brothers and sisters who are committed to change. Brothers and sisters who are committed to putting forth the effort to do something to make a difference when you know there's a need. We're talking about addressing needs now, really, truly. We're going to have to be honest with ourselves and say no more for just standing around watching things happen. You're going to have to get off the sideline, get out the stands, get off the bench, and get in the game. You're going to have to apply yourself, your mind, your heart, your spirit to a cause that's about you for a change. We built everybody. We supported everybody. And like Brother George said, we look around and see so many others having a collective consciousness, but why not have one for ourselves? So I'm suggesting today that we continue to work toward unifying mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, socially, and culturally. And we can do that. It's completely up to us now. Nobody's stopping us. Nobody's holding you back from making a difference. So I say make a difference. Today, start right now deciding that you're going to get involved, that you're going to invest. Invest in change. Invest in the change of your mind, your body, your heart, and your spirit. And make that change for your people. Make that change for your people. Make that change for your people. Let's get ready for the show. Here today, we're talking about an introduction to Black History Month. And so today we're going to welcome in Brother Booker. He's going to give us a lecture on Black history and the importance. So we're calling it Recapturing Our African Minds, an introduction to Black history with Brother Booker. I'm going to bring you in right, brother. Here we go. Oh, yeah. We're not going anywhere. Brother Booker, welcome to the show.
Yes, sir, my brother. Thank you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, sir. We're coming up right around the corner from Black History Month. So we're recapturing our African minds. So we got our heads together, and this is a great opportunity for you to educate our people as we continue to re-educate ourselves and recapture our minds. I'm turning it over to you, brother.
All right, my brother. Thank you. Thank you very much, and peace to everyone that's in the sound of my voice as we say, assalamu alaikum. And I appreciate this opportunity, my brother, just to, you know, share some things with us and then discuss what we're going to share. But, you know, my new job with J. Sergeant Reynolds, I am now what they call the East End, Richmond's East End Career Development Coordinator. And in that capacity, I tell the young folks at Armstrong Boys and Girls Club and so forth, who would listen to me, I said, my job is to help you take control of your future. Okay? That's what my boss lady told me. Help them take control of their future. You don't have to go to Reynolds. You don't have to do it. But when you leave high school, know where you're going, know what you want to do, that you're striving to be years from now. And I want to help you take control of that and plan and take control of your future. And as we approach Black History Month, to do that, to take control of your future, outline your future, we must understand our past. We must. It's vital. And when you look at that, every year we get to this point of February, and we're going to have Black History Month. And a little history, you know, Black History Month began as a week. You know, we had a week years ago. Then they increased it to a month. But anyway, every year when we get to Black History Month celebration, we start with slavery. And I want to know and ask the question, why do we start in slavery? You know, why is that the beginning point? Well, the answer is because we don't know who we were before we were slaves. Let me say that again. We as a people do not know who we were before we were slaves. In fact, everything we know about our history, black folks so-called history, we learn from the white man. It's his story. It's his story of black people's past. We didn't give it to him. He gave it to us, and we lived it. Apart from slavery on, and we're still living it, but we don't know what we were before we were slaves, okay? Now, so looking at it from that point, I'm going to begin the same spot today with slavery, okay? I'm going to start with slavery because I want to make a point with slavery. I'm not going to focus on black history in slavery right now. I'm going to focus on the master's history. And the reason I want to focus on the master's history, the white man's history, is because he told us this history, his story. And we got to take a look at it, okay? According to his history, he started in the caves. He was a cave man in the Caucasus Mountains of Europe, okay, where he walked on all fours, where he ate raw meat, okay, where he made it with animals, okay, made it with men, made it with women. He was a cave man. That's his story, according to him. He came out of the caves. He was in the caves for 2,000 years. On all fours, eating raw meat, living like a beast, killing each other, dying, struggling in the caves of Europe, okay? He had to evolve, okay? He had to evolve into what he would become. He had to learn how to start a fire. He started off with two sticks rubbing them together to get the friction going to create a little spark, get a heat, create a fire. He thought the world was flat. He thought as he sailed the oceans, he would fall off the edge of it. This is his teaching. He was a cave man. Okay? Again, walking on all fours like a dog, mating with animals, just beastly, eating food he didn't kill. Not to learn, he had to learn from animals that, like the lions, that you don't eat what you don't kill. That's a scavenger. Cave man. That's his history. Now, this is his history. When he came out of the caves of the Caucasus Mountains in Europe and learned how to travel the seven seas, if you will, and the oceans, when he got out and realized he wouldn't fall off the edge of it, every place he so-called landed and discovered, he found us. He found black people. When he left Europe, he found black folk everywhere he landed. In what is now called America, the Native Americans were black people. When he went to South America, black people. When he went to Africa, black people. When he went to New Guinea, yeah, Pompeii, black people. When he went to the Philippines, black people. They were called the original black people in the Philippines. The original people in the Philippines were short negritos is what they were called. Australia, the Aborigines, black people. Everywhere he went out of the caves, he found us. This is his history. Okay, this is our master's history, the cave man. All right? And what did we do as a people when he came among us? We said, welcome. Welcome, my brothers. Put our arms over and said, come on in. Come on in. Welcome. Everywhere he landed, the Native Americans, same thing. Welcome. Taught him how to cultivate the land, how to plant, how to survive the cold of the winter. Taught him everything. That's what we did all around the world. And what did he do? This caveman? He studied us. And he realized, oh my God, look at what they got here. Gold, silver, you know, oil. The natural resources are running wild. And we said, welcome, come, enjoy, be amongst us. And he was saying, oh my God, I'm going to take all of this. I'm going to take all of this because they trust me. They believe in me. Oh, I got them depending on me. We trusted and believed it because we didn't know who the caveman was. And we brought him on in. And he stayed and studied among us, and he taught us. And then he realized how religious we were as a people, how godly we were as a people. And he started to bring in new teachings of God, to teach us about another concept of God, about his God, about another way to look at God. And he introduced us to his so-called God, his beliefs, his religion. He wanted us to come to his home, to see his place, of how he told us lies that his where he was had more gold than we had, that you could walk down the streets and pick it up off the streets. It was so plentiful. Come, join me. Come to my land. Come with me. And the first group of us who left Africa with him to come to his home, they weren't forced to come. They believed in him and came to see what he had and shared with him like he had been sharing with us for over 20 years before we made that first voyage to the mainland, as it's called, okay? They said that voyage took 6 months, and the first voyage left in October. 6 months later, November, December, January, February, March, April, 6 months later, they arrived on the shores in this new land of his, April the 1st. What is April 1st? April Fool's Day. It's not like I've been telling you. Now we're going to put you in chains. Now we're going to whip. Now we're going to fight. Now we're going to introduce you to hell. And you're going to see who I really am. But your folk back home won't see it because they're not here. It's just y'all now. And that's when the hell began. That's when the slavery began. That's when the whippings and the sleeping in chains, working in chains, as Brother George was saying earlier, you got to work now. I'm putting you on a plantation now. I'm going to beat you to make you work. I'm going to take your children from you. I'm going to take your woman from you. I'm going to split you up and turn you against each other because you are now my slave. Whole different. And we were like, what? What has happened? And those original slaves, they fought. They died. So they had to mate them. That was the only thing they could get to constructive, mate them and take the children from them and reproduce more children, reproduce more children. They say we first got here was in 1619 in his history. Some scholars say we got here 1555. And we talk about a lost 64 years. So from either 1555 or 1619, some even say we were on the boats with Columbus. So from that time on, we were in this thing, this processing, I guess I'll call it, in his history, this slave man's, caveman's processing of us for 300 years, 308 years, if it was from 1555 to 1863, 308 years. If it's 1619 we got here, then it's 244 years. So what happened during those, that 308 years? The making of the slave. The making of the slave, getting you into submission. That first 100 years of it, according to his history, my slave master, the caveman, we couldn't read or write. It was against the law to read or write. It was against the law for a white man to teach you to read or write. And after 100 years of that, 100 years of non-teaching you, fighting, rebelling against the system, trying to break free, trying to get removed the chains, the shackles of the slavery. After 100 years of that, they started to take the chains off of you physically because they now had them mentally. They had us mentally come, so the chains started to come off of us now. And we're going to give you the book to read. And the first book they gave us, again, this is his history, the caveman's history of how he treated us. The first book they gave us and taught us to read was the Bible. I'm going to teach you now about Jesus. I'm going to teach you now about the God, the blonde hair and the blue eyes. I'm bringing that to you now. And he became our preacher. That's why they say the slave ships that first brought us over here when they were leaving on that April Fool's Day, when we first arrived here, let's say 1619, they said that was the beginning of the old Negro spiritual when they were yelling, come back, Jesus, come back, Jesus. They weren't talking about no Jesus Christ that had been crucified and rose from the dead. They were talking about the ship because one of the ship's name that brought us here first was named Jesus. It's in the history. So after the shackles were removed, then we started dividing you even more and more and more. And the main thing we had to create then was a field nigger. And the house nigga. And the field niggas back in them after that first 100 years, they still had fight in them. Still had some fight in them. Still wanted to go home. Still was struggling for freedom. But now we had a different class of nigga too. They had the house nigga. And the house nigga's job was to teach the field nigga how to act. Teach the field nigga how to survive. Teach the field nigga how to get along in this country and don't piss off master. It was another 200 years of this now. I'm talking about after the first 100 years of this captivity. When the chains came off and the reading was starting to, you were starting to, begin to allow you to read and to write and really get you mentally into this system and create the house nigga, the field nigga, coming forward. And it was another 200 years we were on the plantation. But we were now like that old trained house dog. I can let you run free now because I got the mind. I can let you run outside or I can yell your knife coming. Nigga, come here. And you come running just like that dog. Yes, master. Yes, master. And I'm still taking your children right in front of you now. You have a baby and I want that baby because I'm going to sell that baby. I can make more money. I can sell your wife, sell your husband, put him on another plantation. I can make another couple hundred years of this. And then in 1863, when the old man Lincoln was president, they finally said, well, we're gonna fight and let the slaves go. We're going to free our slaves. And we became known as freed slaves. And what did we do? Stayed right here. stay right here and start looking for jobs, trying to fit in. Start working, as Brother George said. We got to work now. But he told you at first when you left, when he told you can leave the plantation, he said, I can't pay you no more because we're going to sleep. But I can't afford to let you, I can't give you nothing else no more because y'all free. Y'all can go. Y'all can move on now. They don't feed y'all. Go. And the slave said, where we going, master? He said, I don't know, but you can go now. You can't whistle, master. We want to stay here. He said, well, if you stay, I can't pay you. But I tell you what we're going to do. And became known as sharecropping. You can stay and work the land and live where you've been living and just work all the lands. And that's what we did. Didn't know no better. That's that coming up from slave history. Okay? Coming up from that slave mentality. Staying here. And I say all the time, if we had truly been free, we would have left. We would have went back. Not stayed. We would have went back. But we stayed because the mind was enslaved. And we're talking about now getting your mind back. But you got to know what happened to it. Getting your mind back. Getting your mind back. And how we've been divided. Also in that history portion, again, the black history portion. You know, in the Bible, and I'm not trying to get biblical by any means or spiritual or anything, but I'm talking about history, okay? And I look at the Bible when we talk about history because there's some history in the Bible. You just got to understand it. In the Bible, there are two creation stories. Yes, yes, two creation stories. In Genesis chapter 1, on day 6, God made man. God made woman. God was pleased with what he had just done. And in the day 6, God was pleased. Day 7, God rest. Chapter 2 of Genesis. On the second day, God makes Adam, which some say translates from the Hebrew to the Arabic, means mankind. God made Adam. Okay? On day 5 in Genesis chapter 2, God puts Adam to sleep, removes a rib, and makes woman, a mate for Adam, for mankind. And from that point on in the Bible, you hear nothing else about the people God created in Genesis chapter 1 on day 6 when he made man in his image and in his likeness. You hear nothing else about them. From that point on in the Bible, it's all about Adam and his people and how they screw up everything on earth continuously and piss God off, and God brings floods and Noah's ark. He destroys Babylon. From that point on, it's Adam and Eve and their ancestors, their children, have messing up everything on earth and pissing God off, and God have to bring self-destruction on them and so forth. It almost like God made a mistake. I said it again. It's almost like God made a mistake, and he keeps having to correct his mistake because they keep messing up. And it's that Adam and Eve that became cave people. You hear me now? Adam and Eve became cave people, and we don't know in the Bible what happened to the people God created on day 6 in Genesis chapter 1. Now, we know there's a difference because when Cain kills Abel, as the story goes, he gets kicked out of paradise and he goes to a new land. And the first thing he does when he arrives in the new land is he takes a wife. Now, the obvious question becomes, where did she come from? If Adam and Eve were the first people ever made. See? But now, back to my original question. What were we before we were slaves as we enter Black History Month? What were we? All right? I say we were those people created on day 6. In Genesis chapter 1, when God said he made man in his image and his likeness, and he was pleased. That's why when the caveman came out of the cave and traveled the earth, everywhere he so-called discovered, he found us. He found the children of God. So our history didn't begin with slavery on the plantation. Our history, brothers and sisters, the original man and woman of the planet began God. So if you want to talk black history, you have to go back and begin that conversation with God. Whether you call him Allah, whether you call him Buddha, whether you call him God, whether you call him Jehovah, whatever, you've got to start our history with God, with the creation. That's why our children don't want to look at our past. They don't want to look at history, and all we talk about is slavery. That's what they were. That's what we were. I guess that's why I hated history when I was in high school. I didn't want to hear about Uncle Tom's Cabin and all that. I'm moving forward. But I didn't know my history began with God. So this year, as we go forward next week to start celebrating black history, let's energize our children. Let's energize ourselves and say, no, I know we got that little glitch right there, that part that happened to us called slavery. But you know what? Before the end, we were gods, goddesses. In fact, without us, there would be no world. There would be no caveman. We didn't have to rub two sticks together and create a spark to make fire. Our Father created fire. We didn't have to learn that the world wasn't flat, have to go experiment to find out that we would fall off the edge. To know, no, our Father created the world. He made it the shape that it's in. We didn't have to evolve as a people. We didn't have to walk on all fours like a dog and eat raw meat because we're getting put a fire and eat like scavengers. We did not have, that's not our history. We did not have to do that because we come from the creator of it all. That's us, the black man, the black woman. All life on the planet came from us, including the caveman. From us. The book says again, what? From the darkness came the light. That's where we are. That's where we need to teach our children. We need to inform our youth about who we really are, who we came from, what we are. The original man and woman of this planet, mother and father of the universe, goddess of the universe, mother and father of the planet, goddess and God of the universe. That's us. I know it sounds hot, but that's us. They tell us in school you can be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it. But the only thing they say we can't be is God if we put our mind to it. Yes, we can. That's our history. That's what I think our children and we need to understand and focus on. Who were we before the plantation? Brother Marvin, thank you for the opportunity to lay that out. And if you got any questions or anything, I'm glad to help participate.
All right. Thank you, Brother Booker. What a powerful statement that takes us all the way back to the very, very beginning of our creation, right here on earth. So as you can see, we have a long, beautiful history, not just one blip on the radar, but we have so much. So Brother Booker, I'll ask you a question, couple of questions, and then we'll go to the line. I'll bring our resident scholar, Brother George, in as well. But where do we start then? Where do we start to educate and teach our people the history that we need to know in order to bring ourselves up to where we belong, to our rightful place, as Brother Stan say?
We've been touching on it, brother, ever since I've been doing this with you. We got to be one. Each and every one of us, it starts with us as the one. And I know we say, oh, black folk will never do this, they ain't never do this, we don't want to do this, we'll never come together like that. I don't care about that. I don't want to hear that. What will you do as an individual? That's what will you do And as one of the characteristics of the ones, as we say about one of the characteristics of the one, do the right thing. Be the one, even if you have to do it by yourself. Don't say, they won't do it. I don't care what they won't do. What will you do? That's where we must start, each one of us. Recognize, and as you said earlier on, so be honest with ourselves. We must do that, okay? Be honest with ourselves, and if you have to do it alone, do it. And I guarantee you, if we all focus on ourselves and be the one, find the God in you. Find the greatness in you, and you will find me. We will find each other. That's what we must focus on. Getting out, you have people to focus on themselves. Be the one. Find that God in you. Be that greatness that's in you. Okay? You can be God. I'm not going to never tell my child and about people that we cannot be God. Yes, you can. If God's your daddy, which we are taught, he's our father, he's our creator, and we're in his image and in his likeness, then damn it, you can be God. Because the power that's in him is in you. We must tap into it and bring it out of ourselves individually. And then watch what happens when that collective, when that unity comes together, man, we won't need a weapon. We won't need a firearm. Trust me. You won't need that, the power in that alone. The power in that alone. 8-9 billion black folks around the world standing up as one. Imagine that. That's God. Well, we must start with ourselves.
All right, thank you, brother. I'm going to bring in our resident scholar, Brother George, for a couple of comments. Bringing him in right now. Oh, yeah. Brother George, are you there?
Yes, sir, I am.
All right.
And,
what comments do you have? And you are a resident scholar, so you know the history. Give us a little bit of your wisdom, brother.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank Brother Booker, you know, for laying it out, you know, and taking us all the way back, you know, to the beginning. And a lot of times it's necessary to really see that picture that really who the black man and woman are is like hidden in plain sight. You know, people have heard that term, but it's hidden in plain sight. Like, it's all right there, you know, for you to banjo. Say that again? Is that you, Brother Booker?
Yeah, I'm keeping Brother Booker alive on the line.
Oh, okay.
I'm just listening, brother.
Oh, okay.
All right, well, I'm going to keep your line open.
What I wanted to ask was, I wanted to ask, brother, how do we get our people back to that God mind? Because we're seeing things in reverse. We don't want to work because we associate work with being a slave. We don't want to think because we are afraid to think because we were told back in slavery, don't read, don't think. I don't want you to, if I need you to think, I'll tell you when I need, you know, it's like always we need some kind of man, you know, to click us into, you know, being who we actually are. So how do we do that, brother?
Brother, we got to get over to understand what work is. I mean, it's just a word in the English language, and you can define it however. I look at it like this. Work is doing for self. Okay? Work is doing for self. It's like some folk pray and say, oh, yeah, I'm going to pray to God for this. I'm going to ask for this, ask for that, and then I'm going to get up off my knees, and I'm going to put it in the Lord's hands. The Lord got it now. Well, brother, you and I both know, if you do that and only do that, you're not going to get a damn thing you're praying for.
Right.
You've got to get up off your knees and then go take some action. You've got to make it happen. What we're praying praying for, in my humble opinion, is God give me the strength and the ability to do what I need to do.
Yes, sir.
You know, which God has already given you.
I like that.
We just don't know it's there. You know what I'm saying? Just do work is is doing for yourself and kind. You know, that's all work. Work is not a punishment. You know, we're not lazy people. You know, we're strong, aggressive people, thoughtful, brilliant-minded people. We create, we bring, we produce. That's work. God had to work to bring forth stars, sun, moon, skies, gravity, water. Work, you know. I got to do something because I got a vision in my mind.
I like that, brother.
And so from my mind, I bring forth. I got to do some work. You know, our work, y'all know, brother, our work is bringing our people together. That's hard work. But it's not punishment. You know, it's not punishment. I'm glad that, oh, God, please give me the ability to do it, God, to bring my people together. I will die for that, Father. I'll do the work. We got to do the work. Work ain't a bad thing. I'm glad you mentioned that earlier today, brother. No, when you were saying it, I was sitting there saying, it's do for self. It's not punishment. It's not, you got to do for self.
That's right.
You know? So that's what it is. We just got to redefine it and stop looking at it like, now that was a slave mentality. You know, he was angry because he was making you do it. And you were doing it, as you mentioned earlier, Brother George, for him. You were working for him and not getting anything. But the bare minimum and a pat on the head and a smack on the button and all kind of disrespect, that's what pissed you off. He using me. He pimping me. But work for self, man, that's just do it for self.
All right. All right, so what I'm going to do is keep y'all lines open, and we're going to go to the lines. Y'all ready? Here we go.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
9116. Welcome to the show. How are you? Going twice. All right, I guess they're listening today. Let's go on down to 0946. 0946. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Good afternoon. I'm just listening. I'm full of ideas, but I'm just listening right now. Thanks for calling on me.
All right. Thank you. All right. Let's slide on down to 0316. Do you have a question or comment?
No. I'm just enjoying the program, and I'm just listening for this week. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. All right, brothers. So what we have is a history that needs to be unfolded. Right? It's kind of like a blindfold. As we take the blindfold off of our people, then we gain confidence. We gain love for ourselves. So I'm asking you two brothers, and Brother George, I'll defer to you first. What's the first step that we need to do to gain that love for ourselves, and then I'll go over to you, Brother Booker.
Well, self-love, you know, it starts with knowing who you are, because if you know who you are, then you know what it is that you're loving. And so we have a lot of negative names, you know, that are referred to for the African American, and you know, when you have a bunch of negative names and when you have a negative self-image, then you're going to dislike yourself. I mean, that's just human nature. And so we have to learn, you know, something that James Brown learned years ago, that when he wrote Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, he wrote that song, you know, like in one night. You know, he wrote it, and he wrote it for the purpose of the need that our people needed that. You know, he always looked at himself and admired himself, you know, because he loved himself. And so he was like, why don't our people feel about themselves the same way I feel about myself? And he realized then that because we've been taught to hate ourselves, you know, I mean, look at the things that we did back in the 20s, 30s, 40s. We did a lot of trying to make sure we were light-skinned people if we were dark-skinned. We tried to we did what you call, in Philly you call it a process. Yeah, I heard it called, you know, punking and, you know, different things, but you did something to straighten your hair. Why were you straightening your hair? Because you were more acceptable to white society with your hair straightened like that. And you were also more acceptable to black society if your hair was straight, if you look more white. And so during that time period, we did a lot of assimilation, not integration, because they didn't want to integrate with us, but we did a lot of assimilation. And so once we began to stop that type of thing in the 60s, and we start wearing afros, and nowadays, you know, it's got to the point where we dread and things like that, you know, which some people don't understand when they see the young ball players and they're just letting their hair, it naturally grows, you know, and they take that as, you know, he's a mess or whatever, which I don't see it that way, but that actually is a sign that we're getting back to, you know, to ourselves, you know, to feel comfortable in your own skin. And, you know, with the way that this society was set up, it takes a lot of courage to me to politically present yourself to the world who you are, you know, because of all the negative connotations that were thrown at us. And I just, you know, I'm once told the Irritated Genie, you know, it's a brother from D.C. And I seen him at the Kwanzaa celebration, and he had a table set up. And no one else in there knew who he was except for me. Maybe the people that were putting the event on knew who he was. But most of the brothers and sisters that was flowing in and out of there did not know who he was. And I knew who he was, so I went up to him. I had never met him, but I really admired, you know, the things that he was contributing to black people. And he was a strong black figure. And so, you know, he's got a website called Wars on the Horizon. And so basically he's putting our people in the mindset of, you know, prepare yourself to at least defend yourself if something happens. You know, be able to defend yourself. Don't just let yourself sit out there like you're ready for slaughter. You know, don't act ignorant. And, you know, so I went up to him and I told him, I said, I know you are, you know, and he said, you know, put his finger over his mouth, you know, like, don't tell nobody, you know. But like I was saying, you know, brother, you know, I really admire you, you know, and it's to the point where when I close my eyes and I think of the word warrior, I see Dr. Khalid Muhammad, and I see you, brother, you know. And, you know, he was, it should have made him feel good, you know, because right now when we have brothers that are willing to stand up for our people, to defend our people, under the circumstances that we're under right now, that he loves our people enough, you know, to do that. I think that was an admirable thing that I said to him, and he deserved it, you know. But I know that Brother Booker got some things he wants to say, so let me shut up.
Thank you, Brother George. Let me throw this in here real quick before I turn it over to you, Brother Booker. It is said that those who don't know or don't learn history are doomed to repeat it. What are your thoughts on that?
We do it all the time. We repeat the same things every year, over and over. Like they say, you end the year, you start the year off, or the way you end it, you begin the year, you end it in, and most of us begin the year drunk. We end the year drunk. You know, Happy New Year. We do the same things over and over again. It's just borderline insanity because we're not learning from the past, okay, at all. We just repeating it. And like Brother George said, I agree with Brother George. The number one thing you have to do, I mean, the truth is the truth. So I don't care how you want to shape it. You just say it. It's simple. You got to know who you are to begin loving yourself, okay? And that getting that knowledge of who you are, who we are as a people, that's the first step in loving yourself. And also, I'll add to that, it'll get you to the point where words don't mean anything. I don't care. You can say what we think is the most nastiest word in the world, but it doesn't define me. You can call me anything you want to or say about me anything you want to say, so long as I know that it's not me and I'm not that person. I'm not going to let you define me. I tell the children at school all the time, there's nothing they can say out of their mouth to hurt you unless you allow it to. Don't give them that power over you to where they can say a word and just drive you crazy. No. That's not me. You're not defining me. I'm not going to let you define me or who I am. I love myself. You also used to call that stuff, brother, that down south, he said a process, we used to call it putting that cocaine in your head. You know, my great grandma used to say that cocaine, putting that cocaine in your head, getting processes and all that, then finding ways to lighten up our skin and so forth. In fact, I don't know about y'all, but I know in my community, boy, everybody wanted the high yellow sister. You know, she beautiful. She pretty as can be. Why? She light-skinned to death. Look like a white woman. You know, that's that self-hatred. First step, I agree with Brother George. I'm emphasizing it again. Know who we are. Once you know who you are as a people, man, God, that'll generate that self-love.
All right. Thank you, Brother Booker, and thank you, Brother George. As we bring this introduction to Black History to an end, thank you so much for the presentation. Share it with your friends. I just want to leave you all on this note. You can say a whole lot of things about a whole lot of people. You can do a whole lot of things to a whole lot of people. But what we do to each other matters. How we treat each other matters. How we talk to each other matters. And so we have to develop, like Brother George says, a new collective consciousness that brings to the forefront love for self, respect for self, personal dignity, appreciation, honor. All of those things that make a community strong, that fabric that brings a community together, that's what we need. And so as we go into Black History Month, let's don't limit it to just our accomplishments here. Let's go all the way back and learn about our great ancient ancestors who taught those who have enslaved us. That's the honest truth. But also look at how you can now do the work while you're on earth to make a better day for our children, for our generations to come, those who haven't even got here. So again, I say thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Brother Booker, for a great show. I thank you for listening, for you all who tuned in today. I thank you all who are listening on the line. Again, improve yourself. Work on yourself. Commit to self first. Develop yourself. And then reach out to teach someone else. Reach out to your brother and sisters. And until next week, peace and blessings, because those who don't know their history are doomed to repeat it. I'll talk to you soon. Peace and blessings.